The meeting of the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee to order, and we'll open an informal meeting on the Farm Bill reauthorization. And I just want to say a few words before I get started. I have had the opportunity to go back to Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago with all of the Ag and Natural Resource Committee chairs from around the country. And the reason that they chose to have that meeting of Sorrel in Washington, D.C., was specifically because of the reauthorization of the Farm Bill, and have discussions with legislative committee chairs from natural resources across the country. It became apparent to me then how important that reauthorization is to all of the states. And then last weekend had the opportunity to go to a meeting in Portland at Portland State that was being hosted by Congressman Blumenauer to gather information from Oregonians about the Farm Bill. At that meeting, had great conversations with people on our farm and ag committees in the state, talked to a number of people, and realized that it would really be nice to have the opportunity, I think, for the committee to hear what's going on at the federal level, and also to have input and let citizens of Oregon understand what's happening about a bill that has a lot of impacts in a lot of different ways. I think the thing that first took me by surprise was how all-inclusive the Farm Bill is with respect to things that people probably would not have any idea are included in the Farm Bill, from the research that goes on to the forestry to other issues that we don't always think about as being part of the Farm Bill. So I am very pleased to ask Congressman Blumenauer to come forward and give us a little report, and then we have a few other people who are going to testify as well afterwards. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I deeply appreciate the opportunity to spend a few minutes with you this afternoon to talk about the situation we face with the reauthorization of the Farm Bill, something that has significant consequences for all Oregonians. And I would like to express my appreciation for you and Representative Dingfelder for joining my colleague, Congressman Sam Farr, Senator Schrader, last week in Portland, as we had a fascinating cross-section of people, I thought, 150 from all over the state, from a variety of different perspectives, dealing with Oregon agriculture. And I appreciate your invitation. I appreciate your having been with us. I am here today because I'm keenly interested in ways that we can work together to get the most out of the next Farm Bill for Oregon. As you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, this touches everybody. The largest portion of the Farm Bill is something that a lot of people don't think about. They think about subsidies for various crops. They think about research. There's issues dealing with insurance and whatnot. But the largest element of funding deals with nutrition. And this is an area that we've been working on as a state to try and reduce hunger in Oregon, food insecurity, I guess is the polite way we say that. But that's the biggest portion of the bill, and one that we want to be focusing on. But there, as you mentioned, as you review the bill that passed in 2002, you go down, there are 146 paragraph headings that touch everything from rural redevelopment, environment, product development, energy, things that we need to take a running start on this year. You represent Oregon's partnership with 7,000 farmers and ranchers who produce 95% of Oregon agricultural product, just 7,000 of them scattered around the state. They are some of the most keenly interested and effective stewards of the land we find in farms and ranches across the state. Why does a congressman from Portland care about the Farm Bill? Well, first of all, people I represent eat. It represents a significant economic impact in the metropolitan area and throughout the state. Thousands of jobs that are tangentially related to agriculture that wouldn't exist without our agricultural base. Every one of our major cities in the state is defined by the agricultural land around it. timber, and farmland provides the boundary, the edge. And I know one of the things you are working with as a legislature deals with the implications of Measure 37. But the protection of our land, something that Oregonians care deeply about, is also bound up in that farm bill. We have an opportunity to use the farm bill to find common ground in other areas, ranging from energy, the opportunity to use our agricultural resources to be able to reduce the energy input footprint of farming and ranching, very energy intensive. And it's interesting, most of the meetings in the last year that I've had with farming and ranching interests that come to visit me in Washington, D.C., starts with energy and the price of natural gas, for instance. Profound effect. There are opportunities for Oregon agriculture to be able to generate energy. You know, there's a lot of talk about what's going to happen with ethanol, corn-based. If you get in an argument about whether or not it creates more energy than it's required to put into it, corn-based ethanol has limited utility, to say the very least. And that has potential dramatic impacts for Oregon agriculture, people who are involved with poultry, dairy, raising cattle. But in Oregon, we have an opportunity with biomass that is more energy efficient and is more compatible with our farm and forest activities. Gives us a real opportunity to further explore it. Opportunities for research. One of my favorite memories of the last 3 years was being forced to sample 16 different varieties of blackberries down at the research station in Corvallis. The opportunities to take Oregon's bounty. We're the third most diverse state in the union when it comes to the diversity of the agricultural products that we have. Nobody can grow what we grow in such a small space. To things like our number one agricultural product, nursery, where we're just behind California and Florida in terms of the plant materials that we can generate. So there are so many of these opportunities that we face to enrich people's lives, protect the environment, actually go easier on the taxpayer, and be able to produce energy and other economic opportunities. I'm prepared to talk on at greater length, but probably at this point, why don't I just stop? I look forward to an opportunity for a discussion with you and subsequently with the partnership. But let me just conclude that one of the things that we need your help in focusing public attention in the state and bringing the various agricultural interests together in a way that only your committee can do, because you have everybody's attention every day of the session for the next 3 or 4 months or however long you're going. I can't keep track of the program. You have an opportunity to help focus so that we speak with one voice as a state. Oregon gets less back in total federal support. All the subsidies, all the conservation payments, everything combined. We get 1/6 of the total federal benefit of the state than the state of North Dakota, which actually doesn't produce as much agricultural output as we do. And we don't want to unduly harm anybody else. But there's a rebalancing here because Oregonians simply are not getting their fair share. The new farm bill, with your help, is an opportunity for us to work together to make sure that we correct that imbalance. Thank you very much.
Oh, questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Congressman. I appreciate your comments. And as one of your staff members, I was closer to federal issues back in 2002 than I was in this legislature. In fact, I claimed, I think, to one of them back that I'd never run for the legislature. Here I am sitting here. But I'm kind of looking for a clarification. I got two questions, really. I mean, one, could you expand your corn comment and your biofuels comment? You kind of lost me there. It sounded like you were supporting biofuels, and then you were switching from biofuels to supporting biomass, which, of course, several of us worked on last session. Could you expand on that a little bit, please?
I appreciate the offer for clarification. We're in a situation here where the ethanol, the corn-based ethanol siren has the potential of diverting attention. And we need to look more comprehensively at biomass to be able to deal in a more energy efficient and a more environmentally sensitive and, frankly, a more cost effective mechanism. I get a little nervous with all the attention that's focused on corn-based ethanol, but I look at what we can do here from switchgrass to what's in our forest products, where we can deal with some of our forest health and safety issues to be able to do a better job in something that makes more sense for not just for Oregon, but for our overall energy footprint for the country.
Thank you. A follow-up, a second question. I'm kind of looking back to 2002, and could you kind of expand how you see the present farm bill unfolding over the next 6 or 7 months? Because if I recollect, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that I think you voted against the farm bill, against Klamath Aid and a few other things back then. So how do you see it unraveling or unfolding this time?
Well, because it so dramatically shortchanged Oregon, I voted against it. What we found, and if you go out and, as I've been doing since then, because I was just frankly mystified, Representative Boquist, that there wasn't more concern expressed in this state for a sustainable farm program that met the needs of Oregon agriculture. We had a range of amendments that we worked on. So I went out, and I've been spending, over the course of the last 5 years, I've been spending more time just in informal conversations before we get up to it. And I'm finding some, and you can verify this for yourself, on the farms and ranches around the state. There's some people, it was almost a reflex. They were afraid that, you know, if they broke ranks, they weren't part of the team. It is... But as I talk to people now, they will acknowledge that we're not getting our research needs, that the conservation titles were the first that were cut. 54% of the money goes to 22 congressional districts. 54% of the money goes to 22 congressional districts. By the way, none of which are in Oregon. I believe that it's time for us. That's why I wanted to come and visit with you, and I really appreciate the chairman's facilitating this. It's because we've got to get our act together in this state, because people are doing things, I think, in this arena more out of habit and reflex and who they kind of hang out with. I look at the Klamath Basin. I mean, I voted against, was opposed to some of the short-term fixes down there. I've spent time in the Klamath Basin with farmers on both sides of the border who, frankly, there are a number of them who were saying, this isn't sustainable for us. And you can't keep going pitting Native Americans against conservationists versus farmers versus... our wildlife requirements, and in a program that is not sustainable. I would have and have supported buying out all those willing farmers down there to reduce the demand. There were, ironically, some interests in the Klamath Basin who didn't support buyouts by the federal government to willing sellers because they didn't like the signal that it was sending. But then you sit down and you talk to some of the farmers who, you know, they hadn't had, there hadn't been an increase in electricity rates in the Klamath project since 1917. So all of your farm constituents who aren't in the Klamath Basin are paying far greater rates for their electricity. The one change that has been made since 1917 was a reduction in price in 1956. It's not sustainable. And so it's why I've been spending time for the last 5 years talking to people about these issues, and why I'm interested in what we can do together is because we don't want people to do things out of habit, or we want to, you know, be afraid of reforms that are more sustainable over the long term. And you are situated in this legislature to help us be able to form a new partnership that is truly a win-win for Oregon agriculture, whether it's in the Klamath Basin or it's in the Willamette Valley or it's in metropolitan areas.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
I appreciate your questions. They're very important.
Other questions? Representative Quinn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Congressman, how are you? Good. I wanted to talk a little bit about Farm Bill process, and are the ways that we do better in the Farm Bill going to be by figuring out, you know, what programs that we support and believe in that therefore can take greater advantage of, you know, your advocacy efforts? It's not exactly like Secure Rural Schools where it's just a funding formula and then the money comes out. It's really about programs, not dollars.
Representative Clement, right. I mean, there are, as I mentioned, if you just get a summary of the 2002 Farm Bill, there are 146 headings mm-hmm. as you go through under the various titles. And I am hopeful that one of the things we can do in partnership with you is explore what those 146 titles mm-hmm. represent. And if there are areas that we want to explore, add new ones, make refinements, it is very much not just a simple formula, but there are things in the Farm Bill that deal with conservation. There are opportunities. One of the things I'm actually doing with some of my colleagues is exploring financial mechanisms to help farmers who get payments. And we could actually have a pretty long list of what those payments might include, whether they are for conservation or maybe even development rights or scenic easements, conservation easements, or money that could be stabilization payments as we're changing some of these formulas, that might go into what I might call a super farmer IRA, IRA, and maybe consult with Representative McPherson, who in his real life outside of the legislature has some professional expertise in this area. I think there are mechanisms that we can help the long-term financial stability for farm and ranch families with payments. Farmers markets, working with you to make sure we have, I think, 64 or 65 farmers markets around the state. Virtually every community has one. But there isn't a lot of support for them on an ongoing basis. This is something that could find its way mm-hmm. through the Farm Bill. I know you have a little personal experience with the subject, and would value your feedback about the things that you think would work best. I know you're going to hear from people who are involved with research and development and some of the folks who are representing groups of these farmers and ranchers. But I think this is ripe with opportunity, and I hope that we can coordinate what you think makes the most sense, because we want to be... I've got some ideas. I've been talking to people for 5 years. I've been doing some research and working on it. But you are in a much more direct contact with lots of farmers and ranchers and really value a way that we can do this together.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that, and I think we actually have gotten a good start. We're discussing an Oregon Food Policy Council that can dream up ideas, a lot of things you've talked about. I wanted to know what you thought about one other prospect, because a lot of those types of things are about, you know, how you're going to sell your product, so it's getting a better price or getting a payment if you're not going to get a better price. I have something down in legislative council, like most people, waiting for it to emerge that would deal with the estate tax issue on agriculture and timberlands, because there's been a big debate in this country about the estate tax. Often the farmer is trumped out as the person who we're talking about, and I want to certainly help the farmer and on their equipment and properties, and I'm not as into the stock market trader and their estate tax. So I have a bill that would sort of deal with that. Others may have the same bill. Is that something federally that it's not part of the farm bill, but do you think there would be interest?
Yes. Yeah, there is deep interest, and I would at some point like to compare notes with you. One of the things that will happen in the next couple years in Congress will be a reassessment of the estate tax. I think that the approach that I think you're describing, that speaks to the closely held enterprise, like a farm, a ranch, a woodlot, where the partners, often family members, if they want to continue that enterprise, it seems to me that we ought to be able to have an adjustment in the inheritance tax where, as long as people want to keep operating the farm, the ranch, the woodlot, if they don't want to sell out, the death of one of the principal owners in a closely held business, a family business, or small number of partners, should not be a taxable event. I have reviewed this with dozens of members of Congress and people who've been visiting me over the last 10 years about the inheritance tax, in some cases not just farmers and ranchers, but people who have, you know, family-owned construction companies or an auto distributorship or something of that nature. And without exception, every person that I've talked to, that if the inheritance tax was changed so that there was no tax liability unless the people wanted to sell out, it solved their problem. Now, we need to do other things. We need to make an adjustment for inflation. I mean, the inheritance tax, as you know, in a goofy thing that only Congress could do, and I hope our leadership will do differently on the Ways and Means Committee, which I'm privileged to serve, it steps down 10% a year until, I think it's, 2010, and then it's entirely reinstituted. So, you know, you want to stay away from the kids in 2010. You
know, taste test. I'm having a food test.
Have a food test. What this means, in all seriousness, Representative Clem, is that there will be very serious conversation over the next couple years. There will be some version of an inheritance tax. I mean, people don't want to give that much. Most people don't want to give that sort of tax break to Paris Hilton or Warren Buffett or, you know, Bill Gates' father wrote a book why it shouldn't be repealed. So and with the deficits that we're facing, it's going to be there in some form. But with your help, I think we can refine something that really makes a difference to solve the problems, not just for farmers and ranchers, but closely held businesses. And I'll be happy to exchange provisions with you.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Other questions? I have a couple. I mean, first of all, I think I concur with you as I look at the distribution of the money from the Farm Bill and a whole bunch of other federal programs, actually. Oregon doesn't seem to get our share in a lot of different ways. And in some places, Oregon would rather shift it to research. You know, we've got sudden oak death here. So having the money to make sure that we can solve some of those problems, which would help our biggest agricultural sector with respect to that one. And I guess the question I'm going to say is, are we looking at each of those things? We will keep giving you input, and I'm sure we're going to get input from other people about the kinds of things that are really important. But from my perspective, I look at all the specialty crops we have, and I realize that they don't get handled very well with respect to the Farm Bill. We have a brand Oregon, which has done very well for us. And as I looked through the series of stuff, there is a whole thing in here about that kind of help for those kinds of initiatives to in the Farm Bill, and how do we get our share of those kinds of things. And then the final one for me, the one that's the biggest, one of the drivers that I'm here running and ran for legislature, has to do with forest health. And from my perspective, what the federal lack of policy on forests has done is created fire hazards and disease coming off those forests. And just the idea that I'm hearing you talk about the energy part, the thinning of those forests that could be helpful for ethanol production over time, are really important issues. And we aren't ready for that. Ethanol's production from cellulosic ethanol is not there. But we still need to have thinning and other things happening in our federal forests, from my perspective. And I don't know if it goes to the Farm Bill or if we need to have a separate forest policy. But as you know, with the rural schools issue happening, those counties that are owned in large part by the federal government are sitting in a really disadvantage right now. And that was one of those things that almost made us last biennium, last year, may have been the first time we actually got more in than we sent out in this state. And a lot happened because we got a lot of road money and some other kinds of things one time. But if the rural school stuff goes, and I look at it, it comes even greater disparity between what Oregon's getting and other states our size or smaller. So whatever you can do with regard to adjusting those things so that Oregon can start ending up getting its share agriculturally, I think is going to be something that's important. And it needs to be said over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And any kind of forest policy that can fit in the Farm Bill, I would love to have. Because I worry when you overlay the maps on our state of where the potential fire dangers are, they map fairly closely with federally held lands. And that's frightening to me. So more of a statement than a comment, but any comments you have on it, I'd love to hear.
Well, I think you said that well. And part of what we want to explore with you, I'm, as I say, I've since the last Farm Bill, I've been kind of going around talking to people to find out why they weren't more stirred up.
Throw stones.
And I'm learning from that. We have a series of national groups and organizations that are involved. Oregon agriculture, I think, is more organized in this regard and more open to reform and adjustment than it has been. So I think there's some great things going on. But the specifics that you come up with in the course of your deliberations will be of great interest. And if there's a way to make them parallel, that initiatives that you're taking in areas of research, for example, with state resources, that we might be able to pair up with initiatives on the federal level so that we get more out of them. The last thing we want to do is work against each other, but if we can make them parallel in nature, I think there's some real opportunities, and I look forward to what you're hearing from your constituents in the course of your deliberations. I could not agree with you more about concerns about forest health. One of the things that, as you know, we've been working for the last 4 years on a little tiny piece of that equation dealing with Mount Hood. And Congressman Walden and I, as we've been meeting with people over the last 4 years now, one of the things that came out was there was a decided lack of trust. People in the industry didn't trust what government was going to do. People in the environmental community didn't trust government. People in the environmental community didn't trust the industry, and vice versa. We spent a year and a half just kind of getting people to reach the point where we could all talk together and have confidence in a narrow area of activity. And at the end of that process, we had a huge consensus that was developed, very powerful consensus, and I'm sorry it didn't happen last Congress, but I think it will happen this Congress. But the dynamic that you refer to in terms of some of the forest health and fire treatment, we've got to rebuild the trust, and things that we can do, particularly around the developed areas. There is, not meaning to mix my metaphors, but there's a lot of low-hanging fruit here, where they're entirely consistent with what the environmental community wants. Nobody in the business community is opposed to it. If we can take these small steps, we can put a lot of people to work in rural America, we might be able to have some product that could help us in terms of energy. Communities will be safer, and one of the things I'm working on in the Budget Committee with the Interior Department budget and the Ag Department budget is having more money available to do those treatments that are not controversial, because it will save us hundreds of millions of dollars in forest fighting expenses. So you've touched something that I encourage you to repeat and beat us and the federal government over the head. But we look forward to being able to work with you to build that trust in the forest arena, in the farm arena, with water. These are things that I think, with your help, we can really bring the state together while we provide better legislation to meet those needs and maybe try and adjust that imbalance that that you've so appropriately targeted.
Yes, Mr. Chair. This may be somewhat repetitious, but it's not often that we have the opportunity to exchange policy ideas with a member of our congressional delegation, so I'll leap at the chance. Congressman, it seems to me that federal farm policy is fundamentally flawed, at least as applied to our contemporary environment. It still seems to be unduly focused on protecting the agricultural sector from the economic pressures created by overabundance of production. And I see an important function of our ag policy should be to recognize the role as stewards of our non-urbanized lands, that because our farmers are in really they are responsible for a tremendous amount of real estate and its proper management on into the future. And that I would like to see federal policy shift in a way that I think is already happening in some measure here in the state level, which is to draw protection for those ag lands and to create a situation in which we recognize that role and then have expectations that the land will be cared for in a certain way, so that because that is to everybody's good. And I'm wondering to what extent you see that recognition developing on the federal level, or are we likely to see a continuation of a policy that's mainly focused on price supports that deal with the fact that on a commodity basis, we have some extraordinarily productive lands that are producing more than really the marketplace can absorb?
Representative McPherson, I think we are on the verge of a revolution in farm policy. What you described is basically a policy that is an extension of what we first established in the 40s. I mean, the people who drafted the Farm Bill in the Truman administration would recognize their handiwork. They would recognize where most of the money goes. There are a few new titles that have been woven in, and conservation energy and whatnot, and the numbers are much, much bigger, while the number of farmers that benefit is much, much smaller. I think people are realizing the wisdom of your analysis. If we can work to develop principles that reinforce what we want in terms of the protection of the land base, support for the average farmer, not huge corporate farms. Give some help to people who grow food that, as the chairman mentioned earlier, maybe before you can, gets very little help in Oregon. These are things that unite the sportsmen, the hook and bullet crowd who understand it. The majority of farmers themselves who stand to benefit, the new markets that are emerging. I truly believe that we're on the verge of having this happen. If there is a way that we can speak with one voice for the needs of Oregon in a more broad based sense, I think it can be part of this tipping point. We are ultimately going to get to the position that you described. It'll be better for Oregon and 7,000 ranchers and farmers if we can do it this year with the reauthorization, rather than waiting 5 or 7 years hence, when we'll be buffeted by unfair trade claims that'll hurt us, and we'll waste a lot of money, and we will lose tens of thousands of family farms that won't be able to withstand the pressures if they're not given the sort of support that they need.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Congressman Molinar, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here and bring people up to speed. And we're going to hear some other things. And if you have a chance to stay around for a while, you can hear some issues from other people. Otherwise, we'll get the information to you.
Yeah. Well, I'll find out what my adult supervisor is
planning. Exactly.
Plan. But let me express my appreciation for your courtesy in sharing. I don't think we do quite as much of this as we should. I try and cycle back here a few times, in part because as a member of your alumni association, there has been no more satisfying period of my public service career than service in the Oregon legislature. And I know over time it has just become more difficult. The pressures that you face, the cross currents, it hasn't been... it's a rough road that you have, and I'm hopeful that we can be your partner to be able to get the most out of this on a partnership basis so that we are pulling in the same direction. And please don't hesitate if any of you think that we can help provide some information or sort of close some of these loops. We want to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So next we'll bring a panel up. And so if Searle. Brent Searle from ODA. We have Jeff Stone from the Oregon Nursery Association, and Katie Fast from the Farm Bureau. Okay, if you all want to come on up. I guess we can go in that order. We're going to go this. We've talked to them, and each person's got 5 or so minutes. We're going to try to go through this fairly quickly, but thank you. Or less, yes, that would be great either way. And questions if you have them. Yes.
Chair Roblin and members of the committee, for the record, Brent Searle with Oregon Department of Agriculture. I provided you a handout here. I'm going to go quickly through the first couple pages. The rest of the attachment is a summary of the 2002 Farm Bill that presently exists, and all of the titles, the 10 titles in there, and how Oregon participates in the existing program. So that's all background information for you. Just briefly, there's a chart on the front page there that shows the USDA total budget of about $89 billion and how that breaks out by these different programs that Representative Blumenauer talked about a little bit. Fully 63% goes to nutrition programs, the food stamps, WIC, school lunches, and those kinds of things. So that's the bulk of the farm bill there. About a quarter of it goes to those commodity crop programs that you hear a lot about, 5% to conservation programs, about 4% to the Forest Service and all of their programs, and the remaining 4% to everything else, the research, marketing, extension, regulation, disaster assistance, and so forth. So that's a little piece. And you can see in Oregon there the percentages as well. I guess characterize the Farm Bill as it's really a series of safety nets. It's a safety nets for the consumers at the low end of the income scale. It's historically been a safety net for farmers of certain commodities, and a safety net for our environment too, as those programs have developed over time and more recently with the emphasis on renewable energy. And the discussion in the Farm Bill is really how the resources get allocated in those different areas. We are seeing a lot of discussion in the last few years leading up to this 2007 bill, Farm Bill, in other areas around specialty crops, which involves Oregon a lot, in around value-added processing and marketing, water issues, workforce issues, certification, crop protection products, and the whole renewable fuels area. About half of the crops in the U.S. are what are called specialty crops. So these non-USDA-supported crops, and that's on a nationwide basis. In Oregon here, of the crops, about 93% are specialty crops. So we're way at the other end of the spectrum. And in past farm bills, as you've heard, very little funding and resources go into these specialty crops. Oregon, historically, about a half of 1% of the program support funds comes to this state. About half of that for wheat and feed grains and the rest in conservation programs. I want to touch real briefly on page 3. There's a chart here, and I think this is really important in understanding the makeup of Oregon farms and what kinds of things would be helpful here in Oregon. You can see, excuse me, this is compares the last decade and the changes based on U.S. Census of Ag. We basically three types of farms, small, medium, large, if I can speak in those terms. Our small farms, less than 10,000 gross sales annually, have grown, now comprise 69% of our farms. We have about 40,000 farms in Oregon. USDA defines a farm as anything over $1,000 in sales, so it's a pretty low threshold. But about 70% of those are those small farms. They produce less than 2% of the output, but they manage 13% of the acreage, so there's a big land management piece there. It's important. The medium-sized farms are really getting squished, and the large farms, though not growing in number, have grown substantially in their output. Less than 6% of our farms, about 2,500, produce 80% of the production in this state by value and manage over 40% of the acreage. I've listed there, I won't go through them in detail, but some things for each of those segments in Oregon that would be helpful, needful in terms of the challenges they're facing, and I'll conclude with that. I think the big issues that always hang out there in Oregon and in the western states are land, water, labor access and availability, and then how we do all that in a way that's not harmful to the environment and challenges in meeting those environmental standards in beneficial ways. Those are the big issues.
I'll let you guys decide. That's fine.
Ladies first.
I guess I'm next.
Okay.
For the record, Katie Fast, Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on the creation of the next farm bill and give a perspective from Oregon Farm Bureau and Oregon Agriculture. Both American Farm Bureau Federation and Oregon Farm Bureau Federation support extending the concepts of the 2002 Farm Security and Rural Investment Act as we develop the next farm bill. In the current farm bill, there are 10 titles or commodity titles that Brent referenced, and in my testimony is getting passed around, there's actually two pieces. There's one that just shows the breakdown of those titles, a summary of some of the programs that fall under that, and then also a breakdown of funding into a kind of a visual pie chart so you can see where those dollars are going. Within the commodity title, it allows farmers to benefit from the market but provides some reliable income during times of low prices. And while Oregon is not a large participant in the commodity title, we normally just see the wheat growers participating in that program for the most part. This title, we feel, is still critical to Oregon agriculture because it creates a framework that provides economic stability to America's agricultural sector. And that's important to agricultural equipment manufacturers, our agrochemical and fertilizer companies, financial lenders, and others that are looking and participating in agricultural markets. Within the commodity title, growers participate in either direct payments or countercyclical payments. An important piece that we're going to be seeing in the development of the next farm bill is how fruits and vegetables participate. Currently, if you are receiving a commodity payment, so you're participating in the wheat, corn, and other products, there is a planting prohibition for fruits and vegetables on your land. So you have flexibility in the current program to be receiving wheat payments because you're a historical wheat farmer, but you can also grow grass seed or some other crops. However, you cannot grow fruits and vegetables. Due to some recent World Trade Organization decisions regarding our cotton support program, these type of planting prohibitions are perceived as price distortion and deemed as illegal under WTO agreements. Trade is important to America's agriculture, and being able to participate and operate in trade negotiations is critical to our success. So American farmers are going to need to have that issue resolved as we move into 2007 and start the new drafting. I don't think right now there's the solution is out there and completely developed. We're hearing discussions of a specialty crop title, but those details are being worked out. But it is an issue that's going to need to be resolved. The piece or the title of great interest to Oregon is the conservation title. And that's where we see probably more involvement in individual farmers in Oregon in the Farm Bill. It allows for preservation of land and conservation of natural resources that's critical to Oregon's survival. And the key program that we saw developed in 2002 deals with a lot of the concepts that Representative McPherson was talking about in protecting our stewardship and preserving our land base on more of a practice base. The Conservation Security Program, which was the brainchild of Senator Smith, and he pushed it through it and got it placed in the 2002 Farm Bill, rewards producers who are meeting the highest standards of conservation and environmental management by providing payments for a wide range of structural and land management practices. It gives people the flexibility to manage their land as they see fit, and it rewards the best and the brightest. Payments are provided to producers for developing a wide range of management practices. Producers can participate in one of three tiers, and the higher tiers require greater conservation effort and offer greater payments. And this is where Oregon has been participating the highest and been receiving the highest number of payments here than other states. It was developed and introduced by USDA on a watershed basis. Umatilla was one of the first to be brought in, kind of the pilot project for the nation. And from there, we've been adding year by year other basins. This program has suffered, though, with funding cuts. And there are challenges right now where producers are not receiving enhancement payments, where they have put forward their side of the contract and put efforts out for increased conservation but are not receiving their enhancement payments currently. This is a program that Oregon Farm Bureau feels is something that can move forward and get us into a time where you're rewarding conservation, keeping farms operating, and not looking at a commodity-type payment program. Another title that we see as critical is the trade title. And 40% of Oregon agriculture is exported internationally. And so the market access program that funds exporters, private companies, and other trade organizations for promotional activities of Oregon and U.S. agricultural products is an important piece of that. And expansion of that program we feel is important for Oregon. The last title I'd like to touch on is the energy title. The 2002 Farm Bill was the first Farm Bill to have a title dedicated to energy. It's a good basis to start with and expand upon. We are very excited, as several of you know, about the opportunities that we have with renewable energy. However, we feel that the next Farm Bill should not only focus on renewables. Farmers are facing increasing expenses due to energy prices. This is not only felt with the energy and the fuel and electricity we consume to produce crops, but it's also in price increases on production inputs. And the congressman mentioned fertilizer as an example. We are suffering from dramatic increases in liquid natural gas. About 70% to 85% of the cost of fertilizer is directly related to the price of liquid natural gas, and we've seen a near doubling of fertilizer prices in recent years. over this next year, as the Farm Bureau is developed, it is an exciting time for agriculture, but we have to remember that's only one bill that Congress is going to be working on that relates to agricultural policy. There are other issues moving forward Congress that agriculture needs for us to be profitable and survive in the future. Some of those are estate tax, which was mentioned early, immigration reform that has a workable guest worker program for agriculture, and also funding of rural schools, as this committee has had hearings on in the past. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, Jeff, go ahead and ask the clerk. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, excuse me, Jeff Stone, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. I know I say this every single time, but we are your largest sector, third largest in the country, of nursery states. The nursery industry has been active with our federal partners regarding the upcoming Farm Bill. This past summer, we testified at the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on Agriculture in Yakima, at the field hearing in Yakima, Washington, and in Redmond, Oregon, before Senator Saxby Chambliss, then the chairman of the Senate Committee on Agriculture, and Senator Smith. During our numerous trips to Washington, D.C., we've met with key members of both majority and minority agriculture committee staff, both in the Senate and the House. We have regularly communicated with our Oregon congressional delegation, and while this next Farm Bill may be significantly different from prior years, it presents an excellent opportunity to meet the challenges facing Oregon and agriculture. I am pleased that you heard from Congressman Earl Blumenauer today. We participated in the Congressman's Farm Bill Forum recently. We'll be joining Congresswoman Darlene Hooley's Farm Bill Roundtable next week here in Salem at the Viticulture Center. I've not been able to say that word all day. The great news is that our entire delegation is taking an active role in the creation of farm policy. It's important to note that the Oregon nursery growers reject the idea of income subsidies or market stabilization programs for the nursery and greenhouse industry. They accept the risks of farming and believe undue influence in the marketplace through subsidies would actually do more harm than good in the nursery industry. However, like other sectors in U.S. agriculture, we face a range of problems and issues in Oregon that would benefit from a forward-looking, responsive 2007 Farm Bill. In December, the OAN, my association, convened nursery association representatives from six western states: California, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Colorado, and Arizona, along with Illinois, along with our national association, to review and discuss the 2000 Farm Bill and begin to chart out a common nursery agenda. All parties were in agreement that the 2007 Farm Bill represents an important legislative opportunity, and that the Western nursery states should work together to develop and assert a proactive focus agenda. Let me just touch on a couple items that are going to be important this next year. Pest, plant, and disease. The Western states share their concern over pest, plant, and diseases and the ability of current programs of research and regulation to keep pace. It's clear among the greatest challenges facing nursery and greenhouse industry is the threat of newly introduced plant pests or disease, resulting in 1, serious disruption of nursery and greenhouse production systems, and or 2, precipitating a state or federal regulatory response that severely limit normal movement of plant material in interstate commerce. 2, research. Clearly, developing a comprehensive approach to research for the needs of the industry, coordinating between industry-initiated and funded programs on state and regional levels, as well as seeking federal support for programs with greatest impact nationally, is necessary. 3, water quality. Many existing USDA conservation programs have only limited appeal or utility to nursery growers. The Farm Bill offers an excellent opportunity to advance targeted changes to improve these programs, and by working with Congress and USDA, the industry can provide access and enhance eligibility to programs such as the EQIP program, as Katie mentioned, and the Conservation Security Program. Lastly, and often forgotten, is invasive species and plants. It's important that government, industry, and interest groups work closely with one another to prevent the introduction and spread of invasive plant species. The OAN has taken a proactive role in educating industry members about the need to carefully assess the invasive potential of any new plants introduced into trade. We think a deliberative, transparent, and science-based process is in order. I have given you ample testimony in my written comments, and I just wanted to cover the highlights today and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions for any of them?
Yeah. Yes.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Katie, I had a question on the prohibition on fruit and vegetable growing if you're getting a payment. So if, for example, we somehow could get a little more water out of the Columbia and we had some corn growing in eastern Oregon, would they not be able to, or they couldn't grow corn without giving up their wheat payment?
Actually, not in that situation. Corn is one of the commodity crops. So it would be more in a situation where you were growing wheat or corn, you would not be able to grow tomatoes or lettuce or watermelons is an example that might be pertinent in the Umatilla area. There is an exemption for lentils and peas. But that is the case. And so this is going to be a big discussion as we look over the next year and how we handle that planting prohibition, because it has created a price stability for fruits and vegetables because there's limited acreage for those crops. So they need to be kept whole because there have been policies in place and they've been operating under those policies for several years. So as we move and adopt new policies, we need to make sure those industries are kept whole, and that's all that those folks are asking for.
Mm-hmm. Follow, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And just to make sure I'm sort of understanding the reasoning for this, we've got some WTO trade tribunal that we might have to go in front of and defend our American policies in to the world court.
Brazil. Well, and that has already happened, actually, because in the Brazilian cotton case, where Brazil, and I'm not a trade expert, but Brazil did file in the WTO court against our subsidy program dealing with fruits and vegetables over cotton and cotton acreage. And so that's where these policies are carrying forward, and that's where the planting prohibition issue has arisen.
Okay. Other questions? I have just one, and it'll be to Katie, too. You know, the thing that has always been frustrating with the Farm Bill is that we do things like corn, wheat, and whatever, and they get these subsidies. And for a time, the corn subsidy was a good thing, and it made the prices pretty stable and low for all the people in agriculture who needed that for a feedstock. But now with the energy part of it and the extra subsidy for energy for corn, all of a sudden those prices have gone up, and they are hurting our people. I mean...
Chair Roblin, that is a challenge that we are facing when we look at the development of renewable energy, because I am, you know, while I'm not going to apologize that people are making money off of renewable energy right now with higher agricultural products, it is a challenge that's facing our livestock industry. And that discussion is going on at this time parallel with the Farm Bill. And American Farm Bureau, along with several other national agricultural organizations, have asked for increased investment in cellulosic to try to add some new options for renewable biofuels. However, you know, from Farm Bureau's perspective, while Oregon is not a big participant in the commodity title, it is important when you look at what Oregon benefits indirectly from the Farm Bill, and that is through banks that are wanting to issue and continue to issue agricultural loans, companies that are investing in research and development of agricultural products and new technologies. Having that price stability for large commodity programs is important to Oregon farmers, if they're wheat farmers or not. So that's just coming from our perspective when you look at the global economy and our nation's farm security.
Thanks. One last one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Does anyone here know if the various types of crop insurance are covered? Is that a farm bill thing? Like a few years ago, they said some tree fruit could get into the, you know, to the crop insurance business. Is that all here?
Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, yes, it is in the Farm Bill. Insurance is one of those things. Federal Crop Insurance Corporation. There's been some new programs come out that are kind of whole farm income-based programs that apply to any kind of operation now, and they can take out different policy levels and such. So they're getting to a point now where a lot of that has been addressed. They're available. They're still trying to get word out and get farmers interested in those things. Part of the challenge is in a place like the Willamette Valley, where you've traditionally had kind of mild weather and stuff, and farmers aren't inclined to take out crop insurance, then you have a freak issue weather-wise come up, and everybody's caught short-handed, and you wish you would have, you know, had insurance at the time, but don't. So it's one of those challenging things, but it is more available than it has been in the past.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? No? Thanks. And our last two people to speak, are Liz Clark from OSU, Director of Federal Relations and Research, and Ted Lorenzen, ODF Forestry. Thank you.
All right. Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me to testify. My name is Liz Clark, and I'm Director of Federal Relations for Oregon State University. USDA support for research and extension activities at Oregon State University is of critical importance to OSU faculty and scientists on campus, in Corvallis, at experiment stations across the state of Oregon, and to researchers at other institutions and across the United States. During the 2005-2006 academic year, USDA was OSU's second largest source of federal research dollars. OSU researchers attracted more than $23 million in USDA grants, contracts, and awards. And while the research title of the Farm Bill is typically one of the least controversial and least contentious, it is of critical health to Oregon State University and land-grant universities' research and extension programs here in Oregon and across the nation. In addition to authorizing competitive research opportunities in the area of agriculture and natural resources, the research title of the Farm Bill also defines the federal formula funds, which go to Oregon's statewide, as you know them, the agricultural experiment stations, OSU Extension, and the Forest Research Lab. And these formula funds totaled nearly $7 million in federal fiscal year 2006. There are a few other programs in USDA that allocate funds based on federal formulas that also affect the vet school and some other programs at Oregon State University as well, but those are the three largest programs affected. This year's Farm Bill debate is expected to be significantly different from debates in past years, and typically, as you've heard, the bill has been driven by lobbyists for big commodities such as corn, wheat, cotton, soybeans, and rice. There was some momentum in the previous reauthorization, and there is expectation again that in this year's Farm Bill debate that growers, specialty growers and producers, conservation organizations, and environmental groups may have more of a role in these debates. Also desiring a seat at the table are the nation's land-grant universities. Since 1977, Congress has periodically made changes to several of the permanent statutes authorizing research, education, and extension programs. Many this year are hoping to see not just small programmatic changes, but major reform. Agriculture science advocates started to lay the groundwork for this effort during the 108th Congress, urging support for competitive grants awarding and by creating a National Institute for Food and Agriculture. This was done partially in response to seeing significant investments in the National Science Foundation and the National Institutes of Health and seeing little growth in USDA research. The Bush administration recently announced its wishes for the research title and suggested several reforms and new initiatives for the research title, Title VII of the Farm Bill, Some of the major components of the administration's package include consolidating USDA's Agricultural Research Service and the Cooperative State Research, Education, and Extension Service into a single agency, establishing new research programs in bioenergy and bio-based products, as well as a new specialty crop research initiative, and authorizing funding for USDA to conduct research and diagnostics for highly infectious foreign animal diseases, and investing an additional $10 million in mandatory funding to be available for organic research. The land-grant universities, under the auspices of the National Association of State Universities and Land-Grant Colleges, which is a horrible acronym of NASULGIC, has been working on an effort called CREATE 21, Creating Research, Extension, and Teaching Excellence for the 21st Century. Similar to the President's proposal, the CREATE 21 proposal would merge ARS and CSREES, but two other agencies' services at USDA as well, the Economic Research Service and the Forest Service Research and Development components. The new institute, NIFA, as it's being called, would initially be comprised of six national institutes: Economic Opportunities in Agriculture and Natural Resources, Nutrition and Health, Rural and Urban Community Development, Natural Resources and Environment, Food Safety and Agricultural Security, and Families, Youth, and Communities. The way the proposal is structured, it would continue some level of investment in the formulas as we know them, but primarily seek to invest growth in new competitive areas. And OSU has proven to be very competitive in USDA and agricultural research. By some studies, we're third in the nation when it comes to USDA competitive, behind the University of California at Davis and the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Oregon State University has decided to endorse the CREATE 21 initiative and intends to work with colleagues from around the country to pursue authorization of this proposal as a part of the 2007 Farm Bill package. Our hope is that the new institute will improve budgetary efficiency, enhance program integration, boost stakeholder involvement, sustain core programs, and flourish as a competitive federal research agency. Similar to some of the goals outlined in OSU's own strategic plan, CREATE 21 is envisioned as a reform that will help food, agriculture, and natural resource producers secure the benefits of improved animal, crop, and forest quantities, qualities, and production efficiencies, new and expanded markets, new bioproducts and new and improved technologies, and sustainable production systems, provide consumers and families with beneficial information about food and fuel and health, and increase environmental stewardship. As agriculture and natural resources are critical to the economic and social well-being of the people of Oregon, and as Oregon State University strives to be a top-ranked land-grant university, reforms to strengthen the nation's agriculture and natural resources research enterprise are critical, and attention to the research title of the Farm Bill are essential. I understand there may also be some questions about secure rural schools as it affects OSU Extension and the 2007 federal budget as it affects OSU and research, and I'd be happy to answer questions related to those issues as well.
Okay. Thank you. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I'm Ted Lawrence, an assistant state forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. My testimony includes a list of current forestry authorities in the Farm Bill. It also includes three attachments, two of which are statements from the National Association of State Forests with regard to their initiatives on forestry-related items, one dealing with sustainable forestry policy, the other dealing with biomass bioenergy, and we think those are important elements that should be included in the upcoming Farm Bill discussion. Our third attachment includes testimony provided at Senator Smith's Central Oregon Farm Bill field hearing, and it kind of reflects our thoughts at that point in time what the Farm Bill should include. And those thoughts really haven't changed a tremendous amount. We believe that really forestry nationally in Oregon is at a tipping point, and we really need to think about raising the level of interest in forestry and making forestry a strategic interest in the Farm Bill. It's tend to be an afterthought. The number of forestry authorities tend to be much less in scope and arrangement than the farm authorities.
We currently import about 40% of our softwood lumber nationally, and you look at the paper and cabinet products, we're going down the same path. In our opinion, we're stripping rural America both of their capacity for jobs as well as passing our environmental costs to other nations. This argues certainly for a strategic vision of sustainable forestry policy in the Farm Bill, and we think that needs to reflect a number of realities that currently affect our nation's forests and Oregon's forests as well. We're seeing a tremendous loss of forest land to develop nationally. We're seeing a widespread sale of industrial forest lands, often to different types of businesses than traditional forestry corporations. We're seeing growing forest health problems, including insect disease and invasive species and wildfires. We're seeing tremendous disinvestment in the federal forest lands. The market forests through globalization are really creating a number of challenges for forestry, and the private family forest lands are seeing a range of economic instability issues. These problems are growing and certainly are in Oregon, but if you look at the national issues, over one-third of the state of Maine has been bought and sold in the last 7 years. I think in Oregon it's about 27%.
I'm going to ask you, because we've got a couple other things we have to do today, just to summarize this little part, and then we'll...
Okay.
Thank you.
We, again, in terms of what we think the Farm Bill needs to include is two basic policy discussions. The first, sustainable forestry policy and defining what that would be in a vision for our nation's forests. And then finally, a biomass bioenergy policy that would really focus on cellulosic ethanol and would allow us to move forward with that process.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
I just have a quick one.
Yep.
For Ted. Ted, I didn't even know that forestry was eligible for EQIP. So could you maybe talk a little bit about that and how it's administered? Because my understanding, it's administered through the NRCS, you know, SWCDs. That's where it was when I worked there. And how is it about getting the word out on that, and are there certain allocations for forestry versus agricultural use of those EQIP?
There are very limited opportunities for EQIP for forest lands. California has been the state that's used it the most, and I'm not quite sure exactly how they've been able to use that, but in Oregon it's been a pretty minor effort. And again, part of one of our arguments for that is it does need to be expanded very specifically to be more obviously a forestry-related authority, and similarly other programs like CREP. Mm-hmm. If they were expanded, a forest would be very useful, but they tend to be pretty limited in terms of their scope at this point in time. Certainly that's one of the major differences in terms of forestry and farming in terms of the existing authorities. We don't have insurance. We don't have a number of things that the forestry authorities do provide for farmlands.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. We'll close our public hearing on the Farm Bill reauthorization, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2402 regarding weights and measures.
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
I'll move it. It has a subsequent referral,
yes,
am I correct?
Yep, it does.
To where?
Ways and Means.
Okay, I'll move House Bill 2402 with a subsequent. To the floor with a due pass with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, Representative Smith has moved House Bill 2402 to Ways and Means, with a due pass recommendation to Ways and Means. Do I have any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
According to my notes, the governor's budget proposed making this program entirely fee-supported. And what we have before us is a version of the bill that is not entirely fee-supported. And on that basis, unless there's somebody brings some information forward to me that tells me that I'm confused, or I'm going to vote no on this bill for that reason.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, yes. Mr. Chair. Well, for those of us who will be in Ways and Means, I mean, you know, I'm torn on this because I'll have to deal with it one way or another, and the reality is I'm not sure that there's additional general fund money to cover this, so I think the question becomes, if we pass this out, then it's the expectation that we in Ways and Means are going to figure out how to fund this, or part of the program won't get funded. So I think Representative McPherson raises a good point. I'm willing to, since I get two bites of the apple, I will have to deal with it in Ways and Means, but it is somewhat disappointing because that means we have to find the general fund money, which is going to be challenging.
Yes. Yep, I agree. I do understand that.
Ditto.
Okay. Yes. Any other discussion? Then let's have a roll call vote.
Representative McPherson?
No.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Open?
Excused.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative
Dinkhoven?
Aye.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. House Bill 2402, having received a majority votes, is passed and sent to Ways and Means. Do I need to put a sign? I don't need to sign anything. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. We're going to close the hearing on 2402. And I wanted to move on to introduction of committee bills. We're going to hold off on 2470 right now.
2468.
Pardon?
You have that. 2468.
Oh. And that's what we're going to go to that one after we do the other bills. So we have some hearing.
Don't you love all that micromanaging?
Yes. You want to do that one?
Sure.
I'll open a work session on the introduction of committee bills.
Mr. Chair, I move LC 1901, 1902, 2366, 2564, 2565, and 2580 be introduced as committee bills.
Representative Smith has moved the following LC drafts: 1901, 1902, 2366, 2564, 2565, and 2580 to be introduced as committee bills. And before we have our discussion, I just want to say that voting for these means that no committal to any of them as to whether somebody's agreeing to them or not. It just is getting them on the docket and moving them so they can be heard by the committee. So I would like to make sure that our good representative Smith during the last session clearly let me understand that as a freshman, so I thought it was important to make that. So any discussion on these bills?
Mr. Chair, if I might ask, understanding what you just said, thank you.
Yes.
Does it mean they're automatically going to have hearings then and work sessions or not even necessarily?
Not necessarily. It doesn't mean that we'd have to, but without having it done, it couldn't happen.
Right, sure. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. But to be honest, I would say most of these will have hearings, not necessarily work sessions, of course. But you are going to just want to. So any other discussion? I did want to acknowledge that I know, but it's part of the discussion.
Oh, okay.
That Representative Boquist was unable to stay. He had a further commitment, and he just wanted to let people know that he would have voted against LC 2366, 2564, and 2563. I like putting him on the record. He asked that, so I do. So, any other discussion? So the motion on the floor, we'll have a roll call vote.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Boquist, excused. Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Dinkhoven?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. So those LC drafts have been introduced as committee bills. And now we will close the work session on introduction of committee bills and open a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2468, which started a while back, and we'll get on with the people who have signed up.
Pardon?
Oh, and that's true. We do hear your phone. So if you have phones on, remember that off is the only position for them. Otherwise, they interfere with the system. And these are people from today, right?
Yes.
So we'll have Ted Lorenzen from the Forest Department again, and we'll start with that. Oh, no, I don't want to leave it yet. We're going to work session. We're just going to hear or possible
work session.
Did I?
Yeah.
Let me change that. Did I say work session?
I said and.
Let me close that work session and. I don't know that we have time to hear everybody and if we're going to have a vote on it today. So
okay.
We'll just open a public hearing right now for.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Ted Lawrence, Assistant State Forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I'll be real brief on this. Basically, House Bill 2416 eliminates the requirement the Forest Legacy Program be wholly within an urban growth boundary. This change would allow the program to address the development pressures that currently are occurring on private forest lands, and certainly allow the program to be used as an important tool in working and maintaining working forest, where working forests are essential to the forest sector and Oregon's economy. I've attached a Forest Legacy Program background for your review and use. We think this program would allow a number of other programs. You heard about the Community Forestry Authority last week or week before, and this would be a useful tool in helping support those sorts of programs as well. So with that, I'll close. The department very strongly supports this bill.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Nan Evans from the Nature Conservancy, Bruce Taylor from Defenders of Wildlife, and Bill Cluden. Might as well all come on up. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess it's ladies first. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Nan Evans. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Nature Conservancy. I want to take about 5 seconds to reflect on how interesting it has been to sit through your hearing today and to realize how many areas of common interest and common concerns we share. The Nature Conservancy is a strong supporter of strengthening the Farm Bill, particularly the conservation programs. We're lobbying very hard in Washington, D.C. We are looking for ways to help resolve some of the woody biomass issues and improve the forest health conditions of our forests, as well as reduce the risks of unnatural fires. We have been a longtime supporter of the Secure Rural Schools program that you all have been talking about. And actually, the list goes on and even gets to the point of various kinds of tax incentive issues. Now, that said, I'll add my voice to perhaps a chorus here, I hope, in support of House Bill 2468. You have testimony in front of you. I will make it very brief and very short. The Conservancy supports this bill. It is an incentives-based voluntary program that allows landowners, particularly forest owners, to make decisions about the fate of their own land, to keep it in forest land, and that, of course, brings with it great conservation values, which is why we support it. And that's all I really need to say.
Thank you.
My name is Bruce Taylor. I'm here today for Defenders of Wildlife to support the bill. I also don't want to stand between you and a work session on the bill, so I'll be very brief. We think it's a great bill. We appreciate the leadership of Representatives Holby and Burley on this and your support, Mr. Chair. And I will say that you heard last week from the stories from Bend and Eugene, some of the kinds of needs for these funds there, and clearly there's not enough money in the Forest Legacy Program to address all the instances where this will be, but by removing the restrictions that are on the program right now, you will free the Department of Forestry to be able to partner with other interests out there to leverage larger sums of money to address some of the most important places there. We appreciate your support for this, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Roland. Committee, I heard a statement the other day when we was talking about this, and I couldn't agree with Representative Dinkfelder
anymore.
Bill Cluden, for the record, Carpenters Industrial Council. I couldn't agree, Representative, with what you said the other day, why Oregon hasn't adopted this years ago. We worked with Senator Shields in 2003. We worked with 2005. This is a win for Oregon. Oregon's heritage is its forest. Working forest. It works for the state. It works for wildlife habitat. No one thought a few years ago that we'd see vast thousands of acres being sold of Oregon forest to banking spruce. No one thought we'd see industry put vast acres on Major 37.
No.
Oregon can't afford to lose any more working forests. We can help all aspects of this state. We can keep people working for recreation, air, water, and provides fiber for our mills. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, is there anyone else who has not testified? We can let these guys go. That would like to testify on this bill. I will close our hearing on 2468, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2468.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move House Bill 2468 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith has moved House Bill 2468 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Say it. It's about time.
Yeah, there we go.
Who asked that?
Then let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Oakwitz, excuse. Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Representative Bauer?
Excuse.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. The bill having received its appropriate number of votes has passed. And we'll move on to the floor. We do need someone to carry this one.
How about you?
It's your bill. Your name's on it.
You and Brody.
I'm one of the people. Okay. Yeah. I would be glad. To I'm already carrying another one, so I was just giving it an opportunity to other people if they'd like to.
Or maybe Representative Brody would like to carry it.
Well, that's a possibility.
And Mr. Hall.
I will... Let's give it to Representative Burley. I think that would be a good thing.
And if he doesn't want it, I'll carry it.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll do it.
Yeah. I'll do it, too. Thank you.
Okay. We'll close that hearing on House Bill 2468. Is
work session
2468. Thank you very much. Are any other discussions for the committee? Then we will close our committee on Ag and Natural Resources. And thank you all for your attentiveness to all of them.
Thank you.